Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Aaron Smith. Aaron Smith's first book, Blue on Blue Ground, won the 2004 Agnes Lynch Starrett Prize from the University of Pittsburgh Press. He is also the author of What's Required, winner of the 2003 Frank O'Hara Award Chapbook Contest. His work has appeared in many publications, including Bloom, 5 AM, Pleiades, Prairie Schooner, Puerto del Sol, and Poetry After 9/11, an anthology of New York poets. He is the recipient of a 2007 New York Foundation for the Arts grant. He lives in New York City. And hi, Aaron, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear some Blue on Blue Ground and some new work, too.
Definitely.
Right. Okay.
Secrets of an Identity Thief. Never give your name. Call yourself gone again or probably. Listen to conversations around you in restaurants. They have everything to do with you, but aren't anything you can't laugh about at parties. Sell yourself short at a discount, 50% off the lowest price. Bargain bin, 2 for 1. But never give yourself, not even once, for free. Say no. Say, I wasn't able to. I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Every train leaving, be on it. Every love ending, cause it. Everything that's asked of you is too much. Say, too much. Say, I used to. Say, I never wanted this. Story. I shouldn't have seen it, but I did. Through the window. The man dying, or what appeared to be a man dying. Nurses circling, frantically, pulling the curtain in the center of the room so others couldn't see, but not the one to the street. I shouldn't have seen it, or rather, didn't want to. Everyone I love that has ever died has done so in a closed-off room, away from the world, away from the noise of a rained-on city street, out of the view of a person walking home with groceries in his hands. The daughter is staring ahead toward her father's bed, or who I believe to be the daughter is now resting her chin calmly in her hands. She is trying to solve something, get to the bottom of it, one would think, if the constellation of bodies weren't twirling in such a hurry beside her. Instead, she is thinking how quickly I am made strange. Or more likely, she is thinking, is this really happening? Or yesterday he was fine? Or the doctor said, probably going home? Or who will I call now? Or how quickly in this life we come to be here? We are eye level, but she doesn't see me. And I would be ashamed for her to see me, seeing her as she sees her father dying. And yet I want to tap the glass, say, you don't have to be strong. This really should destroy you. Or love is a burden sometimes. I could have told you. But that is another story, not this story, of a daughter sitting in a room watching her father die, of a stranger stopping to watch through a window. Valedictory. They're having this dinner for me, and I'm stuck, staring at the city through the big window that takes up most of the wall. I've been doing this a lot lately, looking out past wherever I am, whoever I'm around. It's childish and probably boring, but since you died, I like to pretend you're out there. Perhaps on the corner of Liberty and Wood, on a bench in front of Hines Hall, maybe standing behind Jim's Law Building. You don't know him, but it's the building to the right with the lights on top. It seems I'm caught, thinking I'll run into you, though I know you're gone. Or perhaps you're a movie cliche, sitting on the stairwell by the door, watching everyone talk around me, watching my eyes well up since they haven't numbed my brain with pills yet, for pulling over on the side of the road to cry about books that aren't that sad. I'm used to silence, so I don't expect anything from you, nothing to make me feel supernatural. But I have to tell you, I worry sometimes that maybe you're like me now, sitting up high, surrounded by strangers, staring at some gray place they're trying to convince you is heaven, and you're trapped behind a glass wall, wanting to say something to a person, knowing full well he can't hear you.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Aaron Smith, reading from his book Blue on Blue Ground. Well, those are sort of some sad poems there. I'm wondering if you could talk about perspective in a way, because it seems to me there's a lot in your work about someone viewing the suffering of others, and the beauty of others in that continuum of emotions, but there's often a wall, a window, or, you know, a distance in this watching that's happening.
I've always thought that Blue and Blue Ground is a very lonely book. A lot of the people that I trust as readers have never really agreed with me on that, but I guess it was written primarily in my 20s. I'm 33 now, and it took me about 10 years to write, and I really felt like I was moving around a lot, and it was a lot of feeling disconnected, and I think kind of just finding a way to connect into a world that I didn't really feel settled in, into a body I didn't feel settled in, and with people I didn't feel particularly comfortable with. So it was a lot more, I think, like exploring what was going on, the distances between people, mm-hmm. and just what it is to relate to somebody physically with them, even beside you or across from you or even emotionally, I guess, as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a lot of celebratory poems and funny poems in the book, and some of those which you can't read because of language restrictions we have on the air. But there's a range of poems, I think, in your book.
I chose those, I mean, partially, like you said, because a lot of the poems I felt like I wasn't able to read because of the FCC regulations on language. But so I think also, you know, there are other poems in the book that I think have gotten more attention to some extent. And I think they do take up a lot of space sometimes because people might be uncomfortable with subject matter. So I think they focus on particular poems. Mm-hmm. And I do think that Blue and Blue Ground has a lot of poems in it that are sad or tender or lonely or, you know, that also may, you know, that may be daring too and have all of these things happening at one time.
Well, I think all the poems are daring in the sense that, you know, you're talking about, you know, what's not said between people and the distances in the lives of others. And that's something we all know about that may not talk about enough. And
our world is set up for silence. You know, I mean, yes, we have free speech, but I think almost everything that we deal with from the very beginning is be polite, don't say this, get along, make people comfortable. You know, and I think that is something that as artists, as writers particularly, you know, we're dealing with. Yeah.
That's a problem. Okay. So let's – can we have more poems?
Sure. I'm actually going to read some poems from a new manuscript that I'm working on and I think getting close to finishing up. And I think that these are somewhat different in tone from the ones that I read to open up. This one's called Open Letter. This probably goes out to the people who want us to be silent, I think.
Okay.
You are a boring man. Your wife is boring. Your children are boring. Even your dog, boring. When you walk to the train and your socks fall down in your boots and you bend down to pull them up, that is boring. Your choice of socks is boring. So is the way you walk. You eat boring bagels with butter, not cream cheese, and your breath reeks with boring, boring coffee and morning stink. Your coffee is black and boring, and the hand that holds the cup is lonely and boring and lonely, boring. You are too boring to hate, and your family is too boring to die by disaster or murder.
That covers it, I think.
There's so much more to cover. Hurtful. I think this new book at times feels like my Alanis Morissette Jagged Little Pill book. A little bit of anger, I think, in it.
Oh, just a bit.
Hurtful. It's true I've never been able to defend myself against your white T-shirt, and that for most of last summer I confused wanting you with wanting not to be lonely. There are four words in the English language that have no rhymes: orange, month, silver, and purple. I want more than anything to prove that wrong, and the closest I've come is hurtful. So let me clarify. Finally, I do not love you. Who could take a lifetime of your bad poetry? However, there are things I hate you more for: that you can eat French fries and not exercise, that everyone you let be close to you has to need you, strangers gawking because you're radiant, and you are radiant. Here's another in that vein. He only reads fiction. Since green has never looked good on him, you tell him he should wear green. You say the palm of the earth is green, and because he's sentimental and only reads popular fiction, he loves it. You convince him to buy green towels. You can never have too many green towels. You push him toward green mugs and plates, utensils with green plastic handles. You want his whole world to become unflattering. He says green as the trees in the forest, and he's proud of his simile. You tell him, write that down, publish it. Yes, love, it really is that good. Green pants and green shirts and green plants for his windowsill, green knobs for his doors, green rugs for his floor, green socks and green boots to walk around in.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Aaron Smith, reading his work. The title of this new collection is Appetite, right?
Yes.
And where are you in the finishing of that? Or?
I feel like I have a draft of the book, and now I feel like I'm putting it together and organizing it to see exactly what's happening. Mm-hmm. I've been kind of writing it with a sort of feeling of urgency, of a sort of slap in the face in a way. And I don't mean that like necessarily as – well, sometimes I mean it as a violent slap in the face, but I think I mean it more as just like a wake up. And I think with Blue and Blue Ground, I was really interested in being very specific about what I wanted the reader or the listener to feel. And now I feel like I'm more interested in kind of laying it out there and letting people come to what they want to feel, not saying you must feel this, you know, saying this is what it is, and kind of respond to it how they feel comfortable or uncomfortable.
Do you think that kind of progression is natural for a writer, or do you think you have given up on being understood in some way?
I don't know if it's so much. I actually think I want more. I think by doing this way, it's more understanding. I think I'm opening up more ways and letting it be more complicated. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that like Blue and Blue Ground wasn't complicated. I think I was just very sure of what I wanted to tell. So I wanted to say, this is how bad it is. And I think I'm still saying it's bad. But I think I'm saying there's so many ways that you can approach it, and there's so many ways to feel about it and think about it. Mm-hmm. And I just want to let people do a little bit of the work and see some complexity. Mm-hmm. And actually kind of open things up a little bit. I just want things to feel more open.
Mm-hmm. Well, the poems you just read had a very different tone from the Blue on Blue Ground poems. You know, angry poems,
irritated. And I think funny,
irritated,
too.
Funny, yeah. Poems. As long as you're not the boring guy or the guy wearing green. But can you talk about that change in tone, and if that runs through the whole book or –
It's weird. I think that – I mean there's definitely a more direct sort of tone, but I don't think that every poem sort of has that feel to it. I can read you a couple poems from the book that I think are more tender.
Okay.
But I think that actually still are similar. They're definitely in this collection.
Okay.
But I think it's just a different approach. Okay. I'll read you two of those. That morning, happy – you put your ear on my nipple, dark under there, shadow and ear hair and nipple hair, nipple cover. I asked what you could hear. Just breathing, you said, your heart a little. Then we just lay there, your face on my chest, me on my back, quiet, not thinking about death, staring and staring at the ceiling. After all these years, you know they were wrong about the sadness of men who love men. It's Palm Springs, and you've slipped away from a day of swimming and drinking to lie for a minute with your eyes closed in the other room while the air conditioner moan groans outside the window, your body chilled from sunburn and untouched for months. Startled from near sleep, you hear a crash of laughter, man laughter, the slapping of bare backs, hands smacking the skin of men drying by the pool or making hamburgers in the kitchen or solving a puzzle on the glass table in twilight. Does anybody need another drink? And laughter. The pizza's here. Can I have a cigarette? Pass the pretzels and your name. Has anyone seen Aaron? You don't say anything but listen to the man saying your name. Soon someone will be sent to look for you, and you'll pretend to be sleeping, say you must have dozed off. You'll rejoin the party soon but need another minute. You want to remember this. You've waited your whole life for them to miss you.
Nice poem.
Thanks.
Yeah, those do feel, you know, very different from the first few. We're looking forward to that book when it comes out.
Me too.
I guess you are.
Looking forward to finishing it.
Yeah. So why don't you read a few more while you're at it?
Okay. I'll read a couple more from that, then maybe another one from Blue and Blue Ground.
Okay.
This one is about my newest obsession, Daniel Craig, who stars—
It's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, really good. Who the James Bond, for those who— Casino Royale, for anyone who doesn't know. Casino Royale 2006, The Blue Speedo, and Daniel Craig. One oiled up stud, one lycra lick, blue cling with an inside view, the place something veiny and strange is crammed into. Song, pitiful. All evening I waited for you in a window in a coffee shop on your street. A thousand disappointments, each face, not your face, floating past. Prayer for a doctor. May sadness tighten your belt, cause your body to swell. Your head leaks serotonin, and nobody, nobody to listen. May your wait in yellow rooms be long and terrifying. May you stand and run hands over tools left out to be used on you. May you be bullied. May appointments be impossible. May you miss work to sit and worry and nobody care, nobody care. May your body be stripped and seen, stripped clean, shaved, made dirty with touch, erased from the sum, back to parts. May your body be taken apart. May your body be taken. May you tremble, be told to relax, calm down. May the light turn black and the air turn thin as silk. May your coat be stained. May your coat be stained. The signs of choking. The victim can't speak or breathe, and the world is silent, a slow blur. Each red car in front of you, specific. The strangers around you, pure movement. Everything enlarged, then microscopic, trying to get back inside your body. And then you remember your first pillow, smelled of Tide. Your first pair of underoos, Superman. Your first swim, afraid to go underwater. Your first day leaving home, the Disney school bus lunch pail in your hand. And how your mother cried in the kitchen window. Remember the way everything always never mattered before this. The victim collapses again and again and differently with each remembering. And just maybe it was meant to be this way or already happened, always already happening. Just maybe the one last thing that matters is how you die or the one good suit you wore everywhere to everything that made you feel important and happy or the way you let yourself be touched and tasted and liked it. The way you didn't know then, your father driving off in his red pickup, would be every man you'd ever love, returning love. The victim turns blue, and it's not so bad really, is it? To be the robe of a virgin who made a savior who saved a world from wanting. Not so bad to be a bruise spit out from the mouth of last night's undressed stranger. A magic marker uncapped on the living room floor of a snooty next-door neighbor. A dead friend's favorite cup filled up and sipped from each morning. A broken-in pair of jeans, a perfectly stained T-shirt. To crave what you were afraid to crave and get it.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Aaron Smith, reading from Blue on Blue Ground and also from his new manuscript entitled Appetite. You know, you talked earlier about how one thing that you wanted to do with Blue on Blue Ground was to tell people how bad it is, and now you've come up with a lot of new ways to complicate that idea of how bad it is.
And to say it still sucks.
I'm thinking is walking around living. And can you talk just a little bit about, as an artist, as a poet, how important poetry is to you and how it makes walking around different for you?
It really is the way that I kind of see the world. It really became a way to figure out the silences and how to live in those silences, because I knew eventually there'd be a place to talk through them, to talk about them. I think I started writing because I always felt like that if you say something clearly and well enough, people will most likely at least hear you out. Even if they don't agree with you, they'll at least let you finish. People rarely interrupt when you put something together and read it and you're reading it. And I found something very comforting. At least you can have your say. And I do think that speaking out's important, and I think that little changes make big changes. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that poetry has to do that, but I do think that almost saying anything in this country now feels political. Anything that has any sort of weight or density to it about the body, about sexuality, sexual orientation, politics, mm-hmm. I think that everybody would rather everyone just be quiet. Mm-hmm. And I think that poetry for me has been the best way to sort of like rail against that silence and rattle the cages a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard for you initially to get to that place of speaking and writing these poems?
I think it's still hard for me to be in that place of speaking. I think that I'm learning how to do it again. And when I think that I've figured it out, I find the next thing that I'm not sure how to say, or I think that we have – it's just – everything's just really trying to shut us down, all the mm-hmm. systems that people participate in, all the mm-hmm. office jobs, I mean, which I have one. You know, I think that everything is just wants us to keep our mouths shut and get on with it and not stir anything up.
Okay. Well, obviously you're not doing that. So let's hear a few more.
Notes composed in a heat wave. I realize a strange affection for my doctor because he knows too much and is happy. I'm dizzy in Manhattan and think how terrible our lives behind these walls. I saw inside once, imagined brick and steel dissolved, and I could hardly stand how we carried on, stacked on top of each other, separate floors, divided into rooms, so close and yet so lonely. Nothing's real in August, heat dissolving us to body. Yesterday, I had an intimate relationship with the throat of a man on a crowded train. He smelled like soap and second chances. My doctor prescribes another pill, so much work to feel happy. I tell him I cried this morning because we die, because we are given back. He says, but not tomorrow. He says, you really should try to be kind to yourself. Boston. I've been meaning to tell you how the sky is pink here sometimes, like the roof of a mouth that's about to chomp down on the crooked steel teeth of the city. I remember the desperate things we did, and that I stumble down sidewalks listening to the buzz of street lamps at dusk and the crush of leaves on the pavement. Without you here, I'm viciously lonely, and I can't remember the last time I felt holy, the last time I offered myself as sanctuary. I watch two men press hard into each other, their bodies caught in the club's bass drum swell. And I couldn't remember when I knew I'd never be beautiful, but it must have been quick and subtle, the way the Holy Ghost can pass in and out of a room. I want so desperately to be finished with desire, the rushing wind, the still small voice. Brad Pitt. With cotton candy armpits and sugary crevices sweat glazing your donut skin. Have you ever been fat, Brad? Have you ever wanted a Snickers more than love and lain on your bed while the phone rang and rolled one on your tongue, afraid to eat it, afraid it would make your jeans too tight? Have you barfed, Brad, because you ate it, ate all the takeout, licked brown sauce off the box while you sobbed? Brad Pitt, down in the pits, chaining menthol ciggies in your thick wallet life. It's not so bad, Brad. Sad, Brad, is it? Frank O'Hara. Devastatingly handsome, in my opinion. I bought one of your books just to look at you. Frowny lips, sleepy eyes. The kind of guy I'd feel comfortable letting drive. There are less people alive each day who knew you, like there are less people alive each day who love me. Will I ever meet anyone new? I wish you would have gotten up.
Thanks so much, Aaron. We're out of time, but that was wonderful.
Thanks for having me.
It's the poetry of Aaron Smith. He's reading from his book, Blue on Blue Ground, and also some poems from his soon-to-be-released book, hopefully, Appetite. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Amy Sutton and Ziggy Edwards. Special thanks to Lauren Wolf. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.